Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Last night, President Obama laid out this challenge.
This is our generation's Sputnik moment. 2 years ago, I said that we needed to reach a level of research and development we haven't seen since the height of the space race. And in a few weeks, I will be sending a budget to Congress that helps us meet that goal. We'll invest in biomedical research, information technology, and especially clean energy technology.
Not exactly a lot of details, but optimism, a call to unity, and a Sputnik moment. Joining us today to deconstruct the president's State of the Union last night is Professor Herb Weisberg. He is chair of the Political Science Department at Ohio State University. Welcome to the show, Herb.
Thanks, Captain.
Also, Joan McLean. She teaches courses on the American presidency and the legislative process in politics and government, in the Politics and Government Department at Ohio Wesleyan University, where she's a professor. Welcome to the show, Joan.
Hi, Ann.
We have lots of things to listen to, including getting back to issues surrounding the Sputnik moment. But first, I wanted to sort of get your overall impressions of the speech. What occurred to you as you were watching it, Joan?
Well, I looked at it in quite a few different ways. One is what the content was, also what the delivery was, and what was the kind of high theater that was experiencing. And I thought the content was what usually State of Union addresses are, and that is thematic, some specifics about a few different things. The visuals were of kind of Reagan-esque, where you look into the audience and recognize different people to illustrate the point. So a lot of storytelling. And then this unity, where we had John McCain sitting with John Kerry. And we had a variety of Republicans and Democrats. I thought it hit the right tone as far as the clapping was more subdued, and that it was, I think the American public really wanted something serious. And those who bothered to watch saw a fairly serious but lighthearted delivery of the State of the Union.
There were a few chuckles in there. It was not, you didn't get that, the really overt clapping constantly. There wasn't that many, although someone complained on Twitter that there were 80 instances or something. I can't even imagine there were, but maybe there were. It didn't feel that way. Herb, how do you think it differed from maybe last year or 2 years ago?
I think partly that he was trying to transcend party more, that he was trying to make a bipartisan appeal, perhaps building on the success in the Tucson speech, and here having the Democrats and Republicans, or at least some of them, sitting together. And I think that came off to some extent. And as Joan was saying, more thematic, some details, but not that many details.
He doesn't seem to take to this kind of speechifying as well as you might have thought 2 years ago when he was running for president. He seems driven by passion of the moment. And, for instance, the speech out of Pennsylvania when he talked about racism. Yep. And then, you know, out of Tucson, some people are saying that's probably one of the best speeches he's given since he was in office.
I thought he was actually going to build on it more. I found myself in the middle of the speech actually drifting. I hate using the B word, but I found it sort of boring in the middle. The top and the beginning and the end of the speech, I think he soared more. But in the middle, it's just sort of droned on in my mind. And yet I saw the overnight polls were pretty positive, more positive than last year, apparently.
Which, Joan, goes back to what you were saying. You think that's what people wanted.
Yeah, I agree with Herb about – I think the first half of the speech was far stronger in tone and content. And then it drifted, as many State of the Unions, into a checkoff list.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
We've got to include this for this group, et cetera. I think the one part of the delivery that I thought was an interesting change was he was less professorial, less kind of telling people what he was saying, and more connecting with the audience. He used humor in a way that you don't often see him use humor. And graciousness when he congratulated the Congress, the 112th Congress, and then turned both to the vice president as president of the Senate and to the speaker to introduce them.
Let's hear some of that humor right now. It regarded the train, the high-speed rail program that he has set forth, which, of course, Ohio is excluded from now. There was a lot of chit-chat on Twitter about that last night, the boo-hooing and what do we care. But he wrote about I mean, he talked about the goal within 25 years to give 80% of Americans access to high-speed rail.
Within 25 years, our goal is to give 80% of Americans access to high-speed rail. This could allow you to go places in half the time it takes to travel by car. For some trips, it'll be faster than flying, without the pat-down.
That was, I guess, in the speech. It was in the script that I saw, but it came off pretty well.
That and his salmon one.
The smoked salmon, right.
I thought that illustrated bureaucracy better than many people have been able to do in a long time.
Right. Yeah. But it is a departure for him to do that. Why do you think, and it came across not as too much of a struggle either.
I think it came off naturally, and the people in the audience in Congress seemed to be laughing pretty naturally on it, too, which was good.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. My guests this hour, Professor Joan McLean. She teaches at Ohio Wesleyan University, and also Herb Weisberg. He's a professor and chair of the Political Science Department at Ohio State University. We're talking about the president's State of the Union speech last night. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can Twitter at Ann Fisher, WOSU, or the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page will work as well. The seatmates idea. How do you think that worked? Do you think there was any kind of overt change?
Oh, overt? I'm not sure. But it certainly was a chance for members to do something different to reinforce. I think the takeaway message from the whole night, if I had a soundbite, was the one, sit together tonight and then work together tomorrow. That really is the key. Now, if by sitting together, they learned a little bit more, if they chit-chatted, you know, it used to be a lot more interactions of members. It's not as much anymore. And whether they can just smile at each other on the floor about something they remember, it could be a beginning. But this is tough work. They've got a lot of tough work. Whether it's enough to make it more cordial, that's a big question mark.
I think one thing we usually see in the speeches is when the Democratic president makes a particular line, all the Democrats stand up and applaud, and the Republicans sit there and vice versa with the Republican president. And last night that was more confusing.
The
seatmates, you couldn't quite tell sometimes which groups were applauding or if it was more bipartisan. And I think that was favorable. That looked good.
And there were moments of discomfort, too. I don't know if you noticed them. I think it was, and we'll get to this later when we talk about the point he was making about undocumented workers and their children in the United States. But when people stood up to clap for that and applaud that, other people were sitting next to him. They didn't know what to do. They were kind of very uncomfortable. You could see them sort of looking around side to side, and there was a little theater there. You know, you mentioned, Joan, the Reagan-esque use of storytelling. That really did start with Ronald Reagan.
Yes, we're having, and I think I'm right about this, it was Lenny who helped save the people in the U.S. Air that crashed.
Right.
And they had them come up, and he was one of the first ones, if not the first one, to illustrate a point. I thought what was interesting is that the president didn't introduce everybody there, but told stories. And, of course, those who were involved in the Tucson shooting didn't need any introduction to most Americans. And so I thought that was a nice touch to have the visual. And then some of the newscasts also had a cutaway shot of the congresswoman and her husband in the hospital room listening. And the congresswoman's husband had the same kind of ribbon on.
The black and white ribbon.
Yeah. So it was a nice reminder. And, of course, leaving the empty seat was another reminder. Now, some people might think, you know, what has this got to do with deficits and fighting wars and unemployment? Well, it has a sense of setting a tone that we are a country, and this is the visual.
Let's hear what he said at the top about unity.
The debates have been contentious. We have fought fiercely for our beliefs, and that's a good thing. That's what a robust democracy demands. That's what helps set us apart as a nation.
He seemed to talk about unity in terms of the things that divide us and how we survive anyway, which was an interesting tack. He also talked about working together.
I mean, that was certainly a major part of his theme last night, and again, building on Tucson's speech, mm-hmm. to try to work together with the Congress, recognizing that it's now a divided Congress and that poses new challenges for him. My impression, too, was that he wasn't always giving the programs that the Democrats would like. He made some comments that would really appeal to Democrats, but he made some comments that perhaps would appeal more to Republicans.
Such as?
The focus on strengthening Social Security, mm-hmm. that being open to changes in the tax code. Mm-hmm. Some focus on the deficit, perhaps not as much as Republicans would want.
He didn't bring up gun control, which he easily could have.
Exactly. And yet he made some comments that the Democrats would like more, the reference towards the gays in the military. But on the other hand, on the Republican, quickly putting that in the allowing ROTC back on campus, that he made the bipartisan appeal there. So it wasn't that much a red meat speech as one might expect.
Except that, again, going back to Joan, what you said at the beginning is people want them to get some work done.
Right, and he's trying to reach different audiences. He's trying to reach partisans. He's trying to reach elites. And he's also trying to reach the media about how the coverage, you know, the first, as Herb mentioned, the first polls, the flash polls showed up into the 90s of approval rating of the speech, which is very high. But we'll see whether that holds today after people get to work and get to talk about it, after people actually who watched cable and didn't watch it last night get to read about it, and then after they listen to the commentaries. So the first indication, it was well received. We'll see how that goes in the next few days. That phrase "reach to the top," what also could happen is fall to the bottom pretty quickly, mm-hmm. if the first few issues that Congress and the president deal with are heated and there aren't signs of the compromise and the work together we saw about last night.
He didn't exactly run from controversy. He did bring the health care, the immigration problem.
Right. One thing I found interesting, I think NBC showed afterwards, the results of their dial work, that mm-hmm. they had an audience of Democrats, Republicans, Independents that would turn dials on the basis of how favorable they were reacting to what Obama was saying at that moment. And most of the time, the lines went together and moved together. And a few lines differentiated, a few sentences in his speech differentiated Democrats and Republicans, but not that many. And I think they were also saying, though, that Independents were often the low end on them, that they didn't move, they didn't react as well. Now, that may comment about the Independents that happened to be in their test group. I don't know on that
score. And also that they're not, don't feel as emotionally connected or disconnected.
I agree.
They just don't have a strong feeling one way or the other. We're going to have to take a quick break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Joan McLean of Ohio Wesleyan University and also Professor Herb Weisberg of the OSU's Political Science Department. Give us a call, 614-292, 8513, if you have a question or a comment. You could also email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
WOSU Public Media presents the Columbus Metropolitan Club's Wednesday Forum. Today at noon, it's Tech Columbus Rising Stars, hosted by Ted Ford, the president and CEO of Tech Columbus. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org. And remember that you can discover more from WOSU anytime on our website, wosu.org. Hear the latest news from our award-winning news team. On our website, you can listen to a story again, share it with a friend, or catch up on news you miss. Hear news from WOSU and NPR anytime online at WOSU.org in the local news section. 27 degrees currently, and a slight chance of snow today. Cloudy skies, a high near 30 degrees. Clouds tonight and a low around 20 degrees. There's a slight chance of snow for Thursday and a high of 29. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. talking about the president's State of the Union speech last night. What did you make of it? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests, Professor Herb Weisberg at Ohio State University and also Professor Joan McLean from Ohio Wesleyan University. Give us a call, 614-292-8513 if you want to chat. And Robert from Hilliard, you want to talk about something that I was talking about last night on Twitter. Welcome to the show.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I just think it was a little weird, the president signing autographs at the end. It was seemed kind of unpresidential on his end, and I don't know if I'd like your experts to tell me, has that ever been done before by any president? And number two, if you noticed, it was mostly men, and they looked like little 10-year-old boys at a ballpark.
And they were probably federal lawmakers.
Yeah, so. And he actually said something. I heard him refer to something like, don't sell it on eBay. And then there was a guy that had like a scrapbook there to sign, and he looks at it, and he studies it for a second and appears to say no. So the guy pulls out the speech and says, it looked to me like, well, would you at least sign this like you're doing it for everybody else? I'd just like your opinions on that.
Sure.
Thanks, Ann.
You bet. Herb?
I think I have seen that before in previous State of the Union addresses, but I agree with Robert that I did find that odd at first when I saw that happening. It really did feel like a celebrity at a, you know, after a sports event. But on the other hand, that's part of the role of the president. And lawmakers certainly want his signature for their families, too.
And it could have been. There were a lot of new members of Congress.
Well, that's right.
And they were at their first State of the Union. And regardless of partisanship, you are in this chamber and you're witnessing history. It could have been just the enthusiasm of being a new member.
I have seen it before, and I've always had that same feeling, that tacky-ish, why are they doing that feeling? And I didn't see him grab the scrapbook, though. I didn't see that.
I saw that exchange, and I think the caller is right. Something about it made him stop, and so he said no. He was going to hand it to an aide, and the guy said no, and then he pulled out his speech to have that signed.
There is a different, though. Things have changed. Things are different. I mean, there is that. We have this culture of celebrity in our country, and it reaches into politics.
Well, and we also have the visual. People want,
right.
You know, someone asked me, what are they saying to him as he's walking down the aisle? You can't.
I wanted a lip reader.
Right.
Right.
What did Hillary say at some point in time? And if you notice, the women were in red and blue and yellow. There is the high theater, and that isn't to minimize the importance of the speech. That's just to say we are a very visually oriented society now.
And the other visual is having the vice president and the speaker of the House behind him. And you always see on TV their expressions or lack thereof. And that's always interesting to watch, too.
I thought it was much more interesting to watch Nancy Pelosi than Vice President Biden or Speaker of the House Boehner. She was very expressive. You know, she could barely contain herself. They're a little more they played a little closer to the vest. Robert, thanks for your call. Or you may be already gone. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Joe from Washington Township, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. I was listening to a program preceding yours, and a Representative Steve Lauderette from Ohio made the comment that all the standing ovation for Obama was showed disrespect, and I thought, well, I thought it showed maybe an interruption or annoyance, but to turn standing ovations into a disrespect for Obama is quite a stretch for someone to criticize. And I think it shows the Republicans' attempt to downgrade or dismiss Obama any way they can. I thought it was a great speech. I thought he took it to the Republicans. I thought he stole the Republicans' thunder with all this stretch of agenda. In fact, I watched Boehner closely, and he tried very hard to not show any emotion, especially like of the speech at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he was nonplussed when Obama gave him such sincere recognition at the close of his speech.
Oh, now, let's play that, Robert, right now, and then so long as you brought it up, and then let's talk about that, because I'm not sure I exactly agree with you there. It is the president is sort of wrapping up his speech about this point, and he's kind of returning to the unity theme, and he does it in the form of a dream.
That dream is why a working class kid from Scranton can sit behind me. That dream is why someone who began by sweeping the floors of his father's Cincinnati bar can preside as Speaker of the House in the greatest nation on earth.
Okay, now I thought that John Boehner got a little misty-eyed there. So let's talk about that first, and then we can go back to what Joe said about standing ovations as a sign of disrespect.
No, I agree. I thought that Boehner really did get a little misty-eyed. I think he probably saw the release of the speech because it had been out even on the web for a couple hours before
himself.
It was delivered.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you know, that was very personal, and he reacted that way.
Yeah, they were very generous comments. And
yes.
If we want to move to the standing ovations, mm-hmm. It's fairly traditional. I think that what Herb noted was this. It was less traditional in the sense that you couldn't look at the chamber and see which side was standing up.
You didn't know if it was Democrats and Republicans or who was doing what.
And at times it was a mix, a genuine mix of who was seated and who wasn't. So I saw no disrespect. That's an interesting comment, but I certainly didn't get that sense from watching it myself.
Yeah, Joe, I want to go back and listen to what you were listening to.
Well, just one more comment. I was moved to tears when Obama used the illustration about the driller from, was it Pennsylvania or New Jersey?
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Going to Chile and rescuing the miners. I cried when he presented that side of the story.
It is an amazing story. I'd actually forgotten about it, and it was probably because, wouldn't you say, because that fellow didn't go down and make a big stink about it. Thanks, Joe, for your call.
You're welcome.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org if you want to join our conversation. My guests, Professor Joe McLean from Ohio Wesleyan University, where she teaches politics and government, Professor Herb Weisberg at Ohio State, where he's chair of the political science department. Let's get into some of the topics that he brought up and some of the messages that the president raised. One of them had to do with the idea that, well, one of them had to do with education. He brought up the children of undocumented workers. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
They grew up as Americans and pledge allegiance to our flag. And yet they live every day with the threat of deportation. Others come here from abroad to study in our colleges and universities. But as soon as they obtain advanced degrees, we send them back home to compete against us. It makes no sense.
Now, that's a touchy subject. That was what he prefaced his comments about immigration reform, too. He said it's going to be a tough fight.
I'd be very surprised if they were actually able to win this fight in this Congress. It certainly has political appeal to Hispanics for him to make that pitch and keep it there. But it's going to be very hard to reach compromises with the Republicans on that for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Especially with Senator McCain having backed away from this issue. A lot of the networks immediately cut to Senator McCain sitting there to see what his reaction was going to be. But I agree with Herb, it's going to be a tough issue. But it's one of those examples where the president didn't just talk about issues that are attractive to both sides. So there were some issues that were pointedly put out there to say this is complicated. If we approach it, we're going to have to look at all of these.
And I noticed the line in the speech where he talked about eliminating the tax breaks for oil companies.
Right.
That clearly was a line that was meant to appeal to Democrats very directly. And certainly Speaker Boehner was not applauding on that line.
No, he was actually changing colors, I thought.
Nor the one about the millionaires having to give back.
Yes.
That was another one. So,
yes.
Which was pretty blatant.
Yes.
You know, just laid it out there. He didn't mince words with that at all. Some people deserve to not have to pay so much, and some people deserve to pay more.
And yet again, he mentioned the problem of frivolous medical malpractice lawsuits. He really did go both ways on this.
Which is a Republican mantra, is
exactly.
The tort reform.
Exactly.
He brought up, of course, health care reform and vociferously. Now, that's where I heard some booing.
I didn't hear that. What I thought is that he did is a nice job of saying, again, using humor to say, I guess some of you here are still not pleased with this health care bill, referring to the recent repeal in the House. And then kind of putting not a line in the sand in an aggressive way, but by saying there are things I'm willing to talk about here, not repealing it, making it better. And then we went to the malpractice. Mm-hmm. But then the trade-off was I'm not going to think about not insuring people, especially those with preconditions. So it was a nice balance of here's where we may agree, here's where my stand's going to be. I thought he did a good job at leaving room to discuss it.
And I think the point he made there, too, about not wanting to refight last year's battles, I assume that's where the Democrats are going to come on strong, that it's time to move forward and not just redo what we were doing last time, but move to a new agenda in terms of jobs, in terms of deficit cutting, and topics like those.
And of course, the Republicans started out this session saying that repeal of the Health Care Reform Act was their top priority.
Right.
So,
right.
And this is where, not 20 minutes later, though, in one of the responses, since we had two last night, Michelle Bachmann uses Obamacare.
Yes.
So 20 minutes after we had all this kumbaya moment, we're back to some, at least, using terms to make the debate much more pointed.
Well, we can listen to those now. She, of course, is representing the Tea Party, and speaking to Tea Party members, the official Republican response, Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, was more measured. He referred to health care reform or the Health Care Act as something, I guess, less derogatory. Why don't we listen to Paul Ryan first and listen to the official response.
We believe that the government has an important role to create the conditions that promote entrepreneurship, upward mobility, and individual responsibility. We believe, as our founders did, that the pursuit of happiness depends on individual liberty, and individual liberty requires limited government.
Okay, this was not a barn burner by any stretch of the imagination. I think it was last year that the Republicans had him in a courtroom with an audience and bunting and all sorts of things, and flag. There was none of that this time.
No, I mean, this was an introduction to those of us who don't know Congressman Ryan, and we're going to be seeing a lot of him since he's going to be chair
of the
Budget Committee. He was very measured, sort of making the references to the reading of the Constitution, reading it again, in a sense, and really laying out a very fundamental debate, freedom versus order and equality, and that coming down on the side of freedom. That's what this limited government, this is the debate our framers had about how much government and the role of government. And it came out in all kinds of ways last night.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Republicans were trying to downplay in advance their rebuttal more than the past. Before, for example, when Bobby Jindal, the governor of Louisiana, gave the rebuttal, that they really played up in advance, and he didn't come off as strong, and so it really looked bad afterwards. I don't think last night that was the case. I think they didn't build up Paul Ryan too much, and as a result, low expectations sometimes is better than creating high expectations. Exactly.
614-292-8513. If you'd like to join the conversation, we're talking about the president's State of the Union last night. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Bob from Westerville, you want to talk about the size of government issue.
Yeah, 2 years ago, we were being sold the idea that big government could solve the problems and take care of unemployment. And we're about $3 trillion more in debt. And we have bigger government, and that's not solving the problem. And the president hasn't learned a thing. He's still pitching larger government, more government spending will solve the problem, and it has made the problem of debt much worse. And I don't think he learned a thing. Now, I don't have any problem with them clapping, so I did 2 weeks ago with Tucson. Clapping there was way out of line at a memorial. But last night, no, not a problem. But big government is not the solution.
I think you bring up an interesting point about far as, you know, I thought he tried to change the tack as far as how he referred to spending money, and he said this.
We're not just handing out money. We're issuing a challenge. We're telling America's scientists and engineers that if they assemble teams of the best minds in their fields and focus on the hardest problems in clean energy. We'll fund the Apollo projects of our time.
So he cast the spending that he wants to embark on for the rest of his presidency in terms of that Sputnik moment, in terms of the Apollo projects of our time. Different?
Well, he clearly tried pushing it in terms of investments, so that we should be making investments. And yet, as Bob's saying, as conservatives look at this, they see the federal government, you know, using taxpayer money for these investments, and shouldn't it be private industry? Shouldn't it be government letting business handle this more rather than being government, quote-unquote, investments? And I think that's the kind of debate we're going to see on this in the next 2 years.
And this debate's also going to be at the state level. I mean, this is not just a federal issue. We know here in Ohio about the debate that's coming up on the budget. I think all of us want limited government. Where the rub comes in is, what do we want to limit? What cuts do we want to make, and what programs, and how quickly? And that's going to be the challenge. So there is some debate about limited government. It's sort of like capitalism. We're all for capitalism, but some of us want more regulation and some want less. So it's going to be an interesting debate about where these cuts can be made, because unless you touch the third rail of entitlement programs, there's not a lot of wiggle room to cut.
There or here. Bob, thank you for your call.
Can I say one thing?
Sure.
About the entitlements, I'm in my 70s, and I think the entitlements should be touched. I think Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security have to be discussed. I mean, we can't effectively do anything about the spending unless we discuss them. They're a tremendous part of the spending.
Absolutely right.
They need to be discussed. I mean, to act like the AARP speaks for all old people is crazy. They don't. They're very left-wing. And some of us realize that, hey, what we've been getting is excessive. You're going to have to cut us back. And we need to recognize that and go along and be part of the solution.
By not mentioning it, Herb, do you think he mentioned it?
Well, I think this is one place where, again, presidents state at the thematic level and not specifics. He mentioned favoring solutions to strengthen Social Security. He didn't really indicate what those solutions would be. I think everybody realizes that that does mean imposing some limits, whether it's different age limits or other reforms to Social Security, limiting how much money would give to high-income people from Social Security. But he didn't want to get into specifics last night, because I think that would alienate his Democratic base. My impression, though, is Obama realizes he does have to make modifications in Social Security, and the next 2 years before the reelection campaign is the time to do it.
Bob, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Take care. We have an email from Aaron. He writes, I was excited that the president invoked Eisenhower. It's a nice reminder that one of our most successful Republican presidents had a lot more in common goal-wise with the current administration than a lot of conservatives today are comfortable with. Do we think that was meant to bridge the bipartisan gap, or to remind Republicans that social programs, education as a priority, and heavy taxes for the wealthy are not exclusively the province of the Democrats?
Could be. I mean, we could have also mentioned Nixon. I mean, when you look at his domestic program, it's much closer to what Democrats have wanted. Maybe in foreign policy also. I mean, Nixon was the one to introduce us to China and why we had to have relations. So there were a lot of ways in which we have see the agenda now as being able to pick up from presidents, both parties from the past.
What's interesting about the Tea Party movement and some conservatives today is really pulling back from what might have been a bipartisan consensus and where Eisenhower or Nixon were going, and being much more conservative. And it'll be interesting to see if this really how this affects Congress in the next 2 years.
There was criticism of the highway system being built in the 50s and 60s. I mean, that was criticized but Eisenhower did it.
And that's seen today as a major accomplishment that really changed our whole economy and how we – transportation systems and how we do our normal everyday life. So we now see it as a success, but it was clearly a federal building project.
We have to take another break. When we return, we'll get to your calls, we'll get to your emails and your Facebook comments, and we'll get to Michelle Bachmann, the congresswoman from Minnesota, and her response, a la the Tea Party. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.
Thank you. Start your day with local updates from the award-winning WOSU News team.
Berzinski's father, Greg, says the recent shooting of Arizona Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords, who also has shown signs of recovery, brought back many unpleasant memories of the day his daughter was shot.
I know what they're going through. It's devastating. You don't know the future, and the doctors can't tell you the future.
Hear the latest in local and national news on Morning Edition on 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. And in 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, hour two of All Sides begins with the proposals to allow oil and gas drilling in state parks and the potential environmental impact on the state parks and groundwater. That discussion begins at 11 right here on 89.7. There are many ways to get the latest local news. Follow WOSU News on Twitter or find WOSU on Facebook. Get headlines delivered to your email by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter at WOSU.org/email. And it's 27 degrees in downtown Columbus. There's a slight chance of a little snow today, otherwise cloudy skies and a high near 30. Clouds tonight, a low of 20 degrees, a slight chance of snow for Thursday, and a high of 29. There's a 40% chance of snow Thursday night and a low of 23. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides. We're talking about the president's State of the Union speech last night. If you have a question or comment on it, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I certainly won't be here to answer your questions. What I do have for you is Professor Herb Weisberg. He is the chair of the Political Science Department at Ohio State University, and also Professor Joan McLean. She's a politics and government professor at Ohio Wesleyan University. So, we have about 15 minutes left. Give us a call if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. And Ed in North Columbus, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. One of the problems, and I think President Obama realizes that, is that when left to its own devices, business generally tends to copy what has gone on before. You know, you come out with a drug, so everybody's got to come out with another version of the same drug, just a tad different so that it looks like it's something different and new. You know, when left to its own devices, we get the Wall Street meltdown, and yet the Republican side says, well, we don't need more government regulations. We need a free market economy. And I think he tried to touch the right basis last night, is we need to take care of those rules and regulations that are hindering progress, but we also need to keep a rein on what unfettered business can do. And we've seen this time after time. When you go back to the so-called golden age, when Roosevelt was president and took care of the trust, and then you had the same thing leading up to the Great Depression, it seems like for some reason business can't seem to learn from history that unfettered business generally tends to run itself into the ground and then has to be rescued by government and then turns around and complains about the fact that it was rescued by government.
Joan, Herb, do you think the president made a strong case for regulation? Thank you.
Yeah, I think what he was trying to do, and he may have even said these words, is to remind us what we want is an efficient and smart government. And what Ed is suggesting is we probably want an efficient and smart business community, too. And so unfettered either government or business gets you in trouble. And so we're trying to find the right balance. And we just don't have as many resources to experiment as much. But we also have a lot of information about what's worked and what hasn't worked.
And I think one thing he's been trying to do is to get out in front of the Congress and in front of the Republicans to get to some issues before they got to them. And certainly he's been working on how to handle regulations for the last couple of years, but was it last week they came out with their regulation review? And this is something that he is pushing now before the Congress could really grab onto it. And I think we were seeing the same thing last night in terms of the freeze on domestic spending, that he knows the Republicans are going to push that. In fact, they pushed it before the State of the Union address yesterday mm-hmm. in the House. But he made that comment that he was issuing himself last night with publicity in advance, that he knows he does have to tackle some of these issues before the Republicans do it fully.
And asking all the departments to review these regulations
right.
and see
right.
which are burdensome.
From Niels on Facebook, he writes, referring to the other response, this is more false equivalency. Michelle Bachmann is not equal to the president. She is self-promoting, and CNN ran with it. The fact that the Republicans are split is the real story here. Why don't we listen to Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota speak for the Tea Party caucus?
Good evening. My name is Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann from Minnesota's 6th District. I want to thank the Tea Party Express and Tea Party HD for inviting me to speak this evening. I'm here at their request and not to compete with the official Republican remarks.
Okay, really? An NPR reporter described her speech as sort of a translation a la Tea Party-isms.
Well, Niels makes a good point. I think CNN was the only network to cover it live.
Right.
But everybody else is referencing it.
And there was a web component there, alive. She was alive on the internet.
But every news outlet is referencing it. So it is getting its due. You know, if you read some of the comments, it wasn't necessarily to rival the Republicans, but it may be to be a sounding board that this is another person. And what you didn't see on the news coverage is comments from Governor Palin. Those are missing in this debate.
Fox or?
No, not in the morning. I'm sure they'll be coming, and I'm sure they're posted on her Facebook. But the story is of Bachmann and the Tea Party, not of Palin. So that's an interesting news story to do. In a way, Bachmann was kind of Palin with data or charts.
And pictures.
And pictures. And she was conveying, and some have suggested that she may, too, be looking at a run in 2012. So there's a lot of layers to this. But I think the caller's right. The real layer is, what's the Republican Party going to do when there is a split between these contingents and they have to actually vote on things?
And her pictures were interesting. The pictures of unemployment over the years and how that increased in the Obama years. And on the one hand, that's true. On the other hand, most people would associate that with the 2008 recession that started under President Bush. And you do expect when recessions begin that unemployment will keep increasing for a while. And the question is,
the mere appearance of a new human being in the Oval Office won't change that.
Exactly. I mean, the trick is to stop the unemployment from increasing much further. But you do expect a natural increase after the financial crisis.
Her tone, the use of pictures, people were comparing her a lot last night to the whole Ross Perot right. phenomenon. And mm-hmm. I was thinking, is this unprecedented to have a split message like that?
I think it is.
It's the first time. Do you see that? I mean, that whole idea of using pictures, it reminds me, when you look at charts and so forth, it reminds me of Ronald Reagan and his Oval Office speeches to the nation.
Yeah, or Glenn Beck and his blackboard.
Well, there's Glenn Beck, too. Yeah.
But certainly not in a response to a State of the Union address
before. These are busier, though.
That's new.
And if you watch C-SPAN, a lot of members now use charts in committee hearings. So it is much more going to the visual aids as the rest of us.
But the president hasn't started using PowerPoint for his State of the Union address yet. That may yet come, not yet.
614-292-8513. We have a few more minutes left with our guests, Professor Joe McLean of Ohio Wesleyan University and Professor Herb Weisberg at Ohio State University. And Jonathan from Columbus, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
In my experience of watching State of the Union, which goes back to like Lyndon Johnson's 66 State of the Union type of thing, the State of the Union I always saw is not, it's not about the politics. It's about the showmanship. It's about the world seeing our bipartisanship in this beautiful chamber, everyone shaking hands. It's about, the president would touch on a few topics, that type of thing. But I've seen plenty of autographs signed. I've seen plenty of standing ovations. I've even seen booing, whatever. Any case, my point is that since we happen to have one of the most eloquent presidents I've seen, I'm wondering if if there's any chance you thought of or should consider fireside chats like Franklin Roosevelt did to get us through World War II. It seems to me like we don't see this guy anywhere near often enough, given his linguistic and verbal skills, that I think he should be on the air a lot more often talking with the American people, and then there'd be I guess that was my whole point.
So a little more exposure for the president. You agree?
Right. In listening to some of the comments, people seem to think that politics is substantive. Well, it's not substantive at the State of the Union type level. A big part of it is showmanship. And I think that this president, one of his greatest failings is not using his showmanship anywhere near as adequately as Reagan did, who wasn't even half as good. So I'm wondering whether the commentators think increased showmanship is a good idea. I can take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan.
Thank you.
I agree that showmanship is an important part of being president. I think one thing that happened to Obama is that very early, even in the campaign period, the Republicans were attacking him and being too self-aggrandizing, making too much of himself, putting himself out there too much. And, for example, with his speech in Berlin when he was still running for president and the focus on him and his popularity. And I think that's led to some desire by the Obama administration to avoid too many speeches, to avoid overexposure. And I think they've been more worried about overexposure. Perhaps Tucson taught them the lesson that more exposure can work in the right situation for him. But I think they have been limiting that perhaps purposely.
And with some new staff on board, we can certainly expect to see some changes. And also, I think with the lame duck session, Obama seemed to get his footing in being able to express himself more and be out front on issues. The trip to Wisconsin was probably the first foray that we'll see about this new way of communicating more regularly with the public. About the High Theater, I think Jonathan's right, is that we haven't talked about who was also there, and we saw that the Supreme Court, many justices did show up. That was some controversy about whether they were going to.
Well, it was bipartisan. The chief justice showed up. He was the only one appointed recently.
But that he had also flirted with not coming. We saw the Joint Chiefs, and we saw the Cabinet and the International. So the cutaways are to show this country much broader than just one type of policy.
I don't know if it's Chief Justice Roberts or not, but someone made the point that it's really important at an occasion like this to show all three branches of government together in the same room.
Right, and that is very unusual. It is just the State of the Union address that does that, and so that is important. One other point that Jonathan made me realize last night was how much the speech focused on domestic matters and so little on foreign.
In fact,
were you going there?
I was going to go there by saying, gosh, I almost forgot he talked about the war.
Yep.
Because it's not that he didn't talk as much about the war as he did anything else, but that was sort of in that middle of the speech part, I think, where our eyelids were fluttering a little bit. And what did you make of that? He made some pretty bold statements, but no one's really talking about them.
I think he really was focusing so much more on the domestic agenda and realizing that he had to focus on jobs, he had to focus on deficit and issues like that, that foreign affairs was practically an afterthought, a footnote to the speech. And he did make comments that were important about Iraq and Afghanistan and mentioned Iran and North Korea, but very, very briefly. Half a sentence on some of those topics.
Again, something that he would be saying to his, you know, to his base out there that opposes the war, but not.
I think he really wanted to make sure we paid tribute to our armed services, the men and women serving. And in a way, there was no news to make. If our polling is accurate, what Americans want to know is when the wars are going to end. And we can't talk about that in any substantive way. So I think they made the decision to make it more general, that there has been progress and an end is in sight. And the focus
and that there
is
will be an end.
There will be an end, but can't go into details.
But that is a contrast with some of the recent State of the Union addresses. I think the New York Times shows the frequency of the use of some words in, say, the Union addresses. And the word terror really just dropped out last night. He wasn't fighting the war on terror in the way that President Bush kept mentioning in his State of the Union addresses. It was just a different era.
He said we have also taken the fight to Al-Qaeda and their allies abroad in Afghanistan. Our troops have taken, of course, as we speak, Al-Qaeda and their affiliates continue to plan attacks against us. Thanks to our intelligence and law enforcement professionals, we are disrupting plots and securing our cities and skies. And as extremists try to inspire acts of violence within our borders, we are responding with the strength of our communities, with respect to the rule of the law, and with the conviction that American Muslims are a part of our American family. A very pointed remark. There was applause. There was a moment that looked, some people didn't feel quite as comfortable with it as mm-hmm. others. But what did you make of that?
Clearly, I think that that's been his message all along. And by reiterating it, by calling out some countries who are involved with terrorism or have terrorists there, he was also trying to balance that out. As we know the difference. We know the difference.
Mm-hmm. And I think a comment about American Muslims, certainly President Bush also was trying to make sure it was not an attack on American Muslims in terms of the war on terror, but it was more the Al-Qaeda that was is the opponent in the war on terror. And I think Obama has been continuing that theme.
There was one remark he made last night that I want to get to. We only have a few more minutes left, and it's about the issue of politics.
At stake right now is not who wins the next election. After all, we just had an election. At stake is whether new jobs and industries take root in this country or somewhere else.
We just have a minute, just a few seconds, but isn't it really all about politics? I mean, this is a huge State of the Union address when you're in the midterm like this.
Well, it's always all about politics, but I think the Obama administration must realize that the 2012 election is going to be won and lost in terms of what happens in the economy and probably in the next year. If they can cut unemployment in the next year, they can make the same kind of Morning in America appeal that Reagan did so successfully in 1984, even though he also started off with a recession in his term. But that'll be the big matter.
We're out of time, I'm sorry to say. I've enjoyed our conversation. Thanks to Professor Joan McLean of Ohio Wesleyan University. Thanks, Joan.
Thanks, Ann.
And also Professor Herb Weisberg of Ohio State University. Thanks, Herb.
Thanks very much, Ann.
Appreciate it. Thanks for joining us today. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.